How? Reacher asked.
You ever been to Burkina Faso?
I've never been anywhere in Africa. Hobart paused for a long moment. He seemed to decide to clam up, and then he seemed to change his mind and decide to talk.
There was a civil war. There usually is. We had a city to defend. We usually do. This time it was the capital. We couldn't even say his name. I learned it later. It's called Ouagadougou. But back then we called it Old Town. You were an MP. You know how that goes. The military deploys overseas and changes names. We think we're doing it for intelligibility, but really we're depersonalizing the place, psychologically. Making it ours, so we don't feel so bad when we destroy it.
What happened there? Pauling asked.
Old Town was about the size of Kansas City, Missouri. All the action was to the northeast. The tree line was about a mile outside the city limit. Two roads in, radio like spokes in a wheel. One was north of northeast, and the other was east of northeast. We called them the 1 o'clock road and the 2 o'clock road, like the face of a wristwatch. If 12 o'clock was due north, there were roads at the 1 o'clock position and the 2 o'clock position. The 1 o'clock road was the one we had to worry about. That's the one the rebels were going to be using. Except they wouldn't exactly be using it. They would be flanking it in the jungle. They would be 20 feet off the shoulder, and we'd never see them. They were nothing but infantry, with nothing that wasn't man-portable. They were going to be creeping along in the weeds, and we wouldn't see them until they passed the tree line and came out in the open.
Tree line was a mile away, Reacher said.
Exactly. Not a problem. They had a mile of open ground across, and we had heavy machine guns.
So where was the problem?
If you were them, what would you have done?
I would have moved to my left and outflanked you to the east, with at least half my force, maybe more. I would have stayed in the weeds and moved around and come out at you, maybe from the 4 o'clock position. Coordinated attacks, two directions. You wouldn't have known which was your front and which was your flank. Hobart nodded, a small, painful motion that brought out all the tendons in his scrawny neck.
We anticipated exactly that. We figured they'd be tracking the 1 o'clock road with half their force on the right shoulder and the other half of the left shoulder. We figured about 2 miles out the half that was on the right shoulder as we were looking at it would wheel 90 degrees to its left and attempt an outflanking maneuver. But that meant that maybe 5,000 guys would have to cross the 2 o'clock road. Spokes of the wheel, right? We'd see them. The 2 o'clock road was dead straight, narrow, but a clear cut through the trees for 50 miles. We could see all the way to the horizon. It was going to be like watching a crosswalk in Times Square.
So what happened? Pauling asked.
Knight and I have been together forever, and we have been recon Marines, so we volunteered to set up forward OPs. We crawled out about 300 yards and found a couple of good depressions, old show holes from back in the day. Those places are always fighting. Knight set up with a good view of the 1 o'clock road, and I set up with a good view of the 2 o'clock road. Plan was, if they didn't attempt to outflank us, we'd take them head on, and if we were making good progress with that, our main force would come out to join us. If their attack was heavy, Knight and I would pull back to the city limit, and we'd set up a secondary line of defense there. And if I saw the outflanking maneuver in progress, we'd fall back immediately and reorganize on two fronts.
So where did it all go wrong?
I made two mistakes,
Hobart said. Just 4 words, but the effort of getting them out seemed to suddenly exhaust him. He closed his eyes, and his lips tightened against his toothless gums, and he started wheezing from the chest.
He has malaria and tuberculosis, his sister said. You're tiring him out.
Is he getting care? Pauling asked.
We have no benefits. The VA does a little. Apart from that, I take him to the St. Vincent's ER.
How? How do you get him up and down the stairs?
I carry him,
Dee Marie said.
On my back.
Hobart coughed hard and dribbled blood-flecked spittle down his chin. He raised his severed wrist high and wiped himself with what was left of his bicep. Then he opened his eyes. Reacher asked him, what two mistakes?
There was an early faint. About 10 point men came out of the tree the mile I had of night. They're going for death or glory, you know, running and firing unaimed. Knight let them run for about 1,500 yards, and then he dropped them all with his rifle. I couldn't see him. He was about 100 yards away, but the terrain was uneven. I crawled over to check he was okay.
And was he?
He was fine.
Neither of you had been wounded?
Wounded? Not even close.
But there had been small arms fire.
So?
Go on.
When I got to Knight's position, I realized I could see the 2 o'clock road even better from his wall than from mine. Plus, I figured when the shooting stops, it's always better to be paired up. We could cover each other for jams and reloads. So that was my first mistake. I put myself in the same foxhole as Knight.
And the second mistake?
I believed what Edward Lane told me.
Chapter 39. Reacher asked, what did Edward Lane tell you? But Hobart couldn't answer for a minute. He was consumed with another bout of coughing. His caved chest heaved. His truncated limbs flailed uselessly. Blood and thick yellow mucus rimed his lips. Dee Marie ducked back to the kitchen and rinsed her cloth and filled a glass with water, wiped Hobart's face very carefully, and let him sip from the glass. Then she took him under the arms and hauled him into an upright position. He coughed twice more and then stopped as the fluid settled lower in his lungs.
It's a balance, Dee Marie said, to nobody in particular. We need to keep his chest clear, but coughing too much wears him out.
Reacher asked, Hobart? What did Lane tell you? Hobart panted for a moment and fixed his eyes on Reacher's in a mute appeal for patience. Then he said,
about 30 minutes after that first faint, Lane showed up in Knight's foxhole. He seemed surprised to see me there, too. He checked that Knight was okay and told him to stay with the mission. Then he turned to me and told me he had definitive new intelligence that we were going to see men crossing the 2 o'clock road, but that there would be government troops coming in from the bush and circling around to reinforce us from the rear. He said they had been on a night march and were taking it slow and stealthy because they were close to the rebels. Both sides were incoming on parallel tracks less than 40 yards apart. No danger of visual contact because of how thick the vegetation was, but they were worried about noise.